When the scene unfolds, young girls, 13 years old, expose themselves.
Hey guys, it's Jack O'Brien, and today I'm talking to Jason Pargin, who writes on the site as David Wong. He is our most popular writer, and today he's going to risk something. We're both going to risk something. So when you go back and read the daily correspondences of writers, even, you know, great writers like Mark Twain, who aren't just writing dick jokes for a living, but when you go back and look at these great writers' lesser-known works, you'll find that a lot of the time, they spend a lot of their time really worked up about stuff like the U.S. moving away from the gold standard, for instance. That's something that you'll notice preoccupies a lot of very serious writing from around the time of the turn of the century, from, you know, the 19th century to the 20th century. The Wizard of Oz is supposedly about this. You know, the yellow brick road, I think, represents the gold standard. Oz is Washington. The Wizard is that coward of a president, Teddy Roosevelt. The Munchkins are organized labor. Toto is the temperance movement, probably. I don't know exactly what everything represents, but it's pretty pronounced. But we've been off the gold standard for a century now. Worked out fine, guys. Our economy, totally based on going off the gold standard. Those guys all look like idiots. And Jason and I, today, are going to be talking about something that might soon, and might already, really, be the cultural equivalent of making fun of John D. Rockefeller for wanting to go off the gold standard. So we've been publishing content to the Cracked Front Page every day for the past, you know, 5 to 6 years. Our jobs depend on us creating content that resonates with lots of people, but it's really mostly a guess and check process. You know, we put up articles we find compelling and hope everyone else will find it compelling. And sometimes we're right, and sometimes we're just sorely disappointed. And occasionally we'll find that there are entire subjects that we find important and interesting that are just sort of cultural dead spots. And one of the most consistently dead spots in the zeitgeist this year has been the NSA scandal and our loss of privacy in general. We've written a number of articles that nobody has really cared about. They haven't been angry, they've just kind of shrugged. So first, part one, something that we think is very important that probably sounds to you like old men complaining about these newfangled bathing costumes that come all the way up to the knee, and why they will doom us all. Moments tail until that tight vent seal off this bell. They'll say it's fate, no mercy. Fool, you should be my least worries. Got a deal with W-2-10-99s or more black helicopters swoop down and try to put missiles in mines.
I write as David Wong on the internet and on crack.com, but my real name is Jason Pargin. I am the executive editor of Cracked, and Jack, you are, what's your title?
I am the GM and editor-in-chief.
For the readers or for the listeners who don't know, if you've watched Mad Men, like, Jack is the Don Draper of Cracked.
And that I'm lying about my past and drunk most of the time.
And then I'm like the Peggy who was hired to bring on, and I've climbed the ladder and then
slowly Dan, plotting my demise.
Yeah, Dan, I guess, would be like the Joan. And I don't remember what else I was supposed to say, but there's...
You're the author of John Dies at the End, best-selling novel.
Yes, that was made into a movie, and then there was a sequel to that called This Book is Full of Spiders. Because I keep coming up with, like, joke titles for my novels, and the publisher, like, we never get around to putting the real title on it. And if you hear background noise, I'm obviously on the phone. Jack has called me in the middle of my workout. I have, like, a sled here piled with stones that I'm dragging around the yard.
It's like, tough to find time because you work out for your workout. Your daily workout routine encompasses the middle 5 hours of your day.
My workout is like, it's the Rocky IV training montage. And I just go step by step of each thing they did there. Like, I'll cut from that, and then I'll go inside, like, my high-tech lab while I run around the track while the scientists watch me.
Oh, you cover both the Drago and the Rocky angle.
Yeah, I do both. I do it scene by scene. And so, like, Brigitte Nielsen's there, and she injects me with steroids. And I'll go back out, and drag the sled around the snow for a while and have somebody sit on it, and it's very effective, and I would recommend it. We'll do a separate episode about that.
Absolutely. So you head up with Syriac, the quick fix section, which is kind of the quick reacting section of the site where you write about news that's actually happening. And you said that there you've kind of noticed just people not caring about the NSA and personal privacy.
Yeah, it's not that nobody cares. It's like the people that care now are like a subculture. They're like kind of the weird paranoid types, I guess. Like there's a core of people who are big on like software that won't let Google track their searches or that protects their computer and all that. But for the most part, the reaction's sort of the same with each new thing that comes out. Like if we reveal in an article that Google is saving every nasty search you've ever done, or that Facebook is selling all of your friend activities to advertisers, or that the new Xbox has a camera that watches you on your sofa, there's always a sort of a shrug, like, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. Why do I care if they're watching me? And I think the NSA stuff, like the revelation that they have access to possibly all of your emails, possibly all of your phone calls, there's a core of people who object to it, but the vast majority is like, yeah, but I'm not a terrorist. So I think that's a generational difference, because for me, that's like dystopian. But to them, it's like an annoyance that someone's is like, otherwise, well, why do I care if they're listening in on me telling my brother about our chili recipe?
Right. Can you talk a little bit about the world that you're from and how that would have been perceived? Like, is there an example of a Big Brother-ish incident being amplified and freaked out about from your lifetime that you can remember?
The most recent one has to be... it's just from earlier this year when Microsoft unveiled the new Xbox and added to there was a lot of people who hated the news, but it had nothing to do with this. But part of the standard equipment was a high-definition camera that watches you the entire time you're playing. And, by the way, the system stops working if you unplug it. And two, they included an omnidirectional microphone in it that records everything that's being said in the room, and that stays on all the time, even when you're not playing the game. Because their rationale was, well, if you want to turn it on, you can just walk in the room and say, Xbox, you know, turn on. For me, that's like the sort of thing, like somebody selling a device like that, that would have been in a dystopian sci-fi short story from my youth. But now, because that sort of thing sort of happened incrementally, and you have everyone under the age of, I don't know, 25 or so, people born after the end of the Cold War, are just used to sort of having cameras everywhere, it's annoying to them, but it's not terrifying. Whereas to me, it's terrifying. And I think every time I try to talk to someone that age about, well, yeah, but this thing's watching you, and they're like, ah, that's tinfoil, you're being paranoid, like they're... what are you worried about, that the NSA is going to hack into it? And it's like, no, I'm worried about this, what they're openly advertising it does. I'm worried about what Microsoft says the device does, which is, yeah, we want to watch you play the games all the time, and we want to listen to what's being said in the room so we can sell this to advertisers so they'll better know what you're doing in your own home. And that's so weird to me that most people are okay with that, and that the people who are not okay with it are sort of dismissed as weirdos, that I don't even know how to express the difference. Like, I don't even know how to explain it to them. Because when I grew up, you know, it was during the Cold War, like the fear of Big Brother was out there as this real thing we were fighting. So anything that is like a whiff of that, of having a camera in your home and people listening to what you're saying, watching what you're doing, I have like a gut level reaction to, but they don't, because they're not from that world.
Even as recently as those full scan, full body scan things at the airport, that seemed to be something that everyone was freaking out about. Maybe the Xbox thing is different from that in some way, that makes it less scary to people.
Well, I also thought the same thing, that everyone was freaking out about the naked airport body scanners. Which is something so weird that the movie Airplane 2, that came out in like 1984, around that time, 83, like that movie joked about it. Like, that was, it took place in the future, and they had a scanner that would scan in, and it would show up on the monitor, you'd be naked in the monitor. And it was like this laugh-out-loud, ridiculous scene, because they were joking about, you know, this is what it's going to come to.
And they were trying to squeeze some nudity into the movie as well, I think.
Right, it was obviously a woman who walked through it.
It wasn't a big fat guy.
So, like, that's the sort of thing that was so outrageous, they used to joke about in a slapstick movie. These movies were not about, like, serious commentary. This is not, like, a cautionary tale. It was right before some scene where, you know, somebody had a bunch of dildos in their luggage or whatever. So for me to, in my lifetime, see it go from that to it being a real thing, and I thought, oh my gosh, everybody's freaking out about this, because I kept seeing, like, front page Reddit stories of people freaking out about it. But the next time I actually went to the airport, no problem whatsoever. Everybody, one person after another, stood in there, let us scan them, walked right through, no questions asked. So I think it's the same thing. I think there's a core of people who were sort of being very vocal about it. But for the most part, I think people have just sort of gotten used to the idea.
So there are two theories that I've come up with on the fly as you've been describing that. So one of them would be that it's based on the reality that they grew up in, right? People who are 25 years and younger never experienced a world where, like, government sort of overstepping what was a concern. And also they grew up in a world, like, that is something that I find myself less worried about more recently because of what we found out about intelligence in the post 9/11 world, which is that there's such a thing as having too much intelligence, right? And we had it. The Patriot Act started digging into people's phone lines, and, you know, pretty soon they had access to more information than they knew what to do with. And now, since that time, I sort of assume about the world around me that their problem is not whether they can access my phone, it's whether they can find the guys who are actually talking about blowing up a building and differentiate them from me. It's something that I'm rooting for them to do better, because it's the central intelligence challenge of our age. Whereas in the past, during the Cold War, you keep going back to the Cold War, and I think you're right too, because during the Cold War, it was all about access to information. One spy was withholding information from another spy. And, you know, there was secret information, and we were worried that our government or their government was listening to our information. And one theory, I guess, would be that this is actually a more reasonable way to view the world, because in following September 11th and the Patriot Act, we now know that they aren't listening to my phone call, this phone call right now, or at least their main problem is trying to figure out a way to disqualify this phone call from the sort of stuff that they have to listen to. And even as I say that, it's a very trusting outlook on the government that I'm sure most people wouldn't have had as recently as like 10, 15 years ago.
I think the difference is you're walking through it intellectually, like, well, here's what they're probably doing with the data, here's what they're probably not doing. I think that the vast majority of people under a certain age, this is not a criticism, under a certain age, it's not a debate at all. It's not that they disagree with me about privacy, privacy rights, what privacy should entail and shouldn't. It's that they don't know what I mean when I talk about that. Because for them, if you've been raised with the internet, and if you're under whatever age, it's, you know, if you're under age 20 or so, you were raised with it. Like, by the time you could function socially, you were doing it over social networking, email, you've had a cell phone, you've had a Tumblr account or whatever they had 10 years ago. So for them, the technology and the loss of privacy came about at the same time. Once Facebook came along, there was never a private version of Facebook. Facebook was always selling advertisers. It was just everything you did to interact with your friends, all of your tastes, all the bands you liked, all the brands you liked. They were always recording that and sending it off. All of your Google searches were always being, it's just assumed, being recorded, watched by somebody, even if it's just a giant computer at Google. So for them to talk to them about, well, you know, when I grew up, the idea of somebody knowing, of whether it be a corporation or a government or some other third party, knowing every little thing about what I said to my friends, what our preferences were, what our habits were, who we associated with, what our ideologies were, there was a time when it was assumed that those things were all private. They've never lived in that world. And if I try to explain to them, it sounds like I'm asking them to stop using Facebook, stop using their cell phone, stop using Twitter, stop posting their personal diary entries on Tumblr where anybody can read them. Like I'm telling them to go back in time. Like the loss of privacy and the loss of technology would have to happen just as the loss of privacy and the gain of these technologies occurred at the same time. So it sounds like I'm this grumpy old man wanting to turn back the clock. And honestly, everything you said makes sense. But for me, and part of this is just my personality, but part of it is being raised when I was raised. When I was in school, in grade school, and again, just to orient the listeners, I'm 38. So I was born in 1975, right? So the Cold War doesn't end until, you know, about 1991. So until I was a teenager old enough to drive, I lived under this. So when I was in middle school, when they had us read 1984, it wasn't like this symbolic science fiction cautionary tale. It wasn't this general warning against totalitarianism. It was a book about, here's what the Soviets will do to you if we lose. This is why you need to join the army. This is why everybody, your parents need to pay their taxes, because this is what it's like to live under the Soviet Union. You have a camera in your house, Big Brother's watching, everything you say is being monitored, everything you think is being monitored. And that's like the nightmare scenario. That was the thing we were scared of. We weren't scared of like a communist economy. We were scared of that, Big Brother. I constantly heard that. Any kind of new law, anything that seemed like an intrusion, you would always hear Big Brother, Big Brother, Big Brother. And to, I think to teenagers, they think I'm talking about like a TV show. But this was a threat that was out there. So to give the young people an idea, when I was that age, in order to prevent that from happening, our government built a fleet of weapons capable of destroying the planet. And we decided that if it came down to either living under Big Brother or turning the Earth into a blackened, charred, lifeless mass and rendering humanity extinct from the universe forever, we chose the latter and did not blink when doing it.
And that's exactly how Reagan put it to the American people, I think, right?
And yeah, and we were like, that was the whole thing. Like, it was live free or die.
Yeah.
Live free of that, and that death is much, much better than living like that. Now, that makes me sound like a crazy person because it makes it sound like I'm comparing the Xbox Kinect 2.0 to Big Brother to the Soviet Union. But you have to understand, it's living under that shadow is the reason why anything that smells of Big Brother gives me like a gut reaction. It's not an intellectual reaction. It's a gut reaction. So when you talk about, hey, this is a fun new device, you can play games on it, and oh, by the way, we're going to bug your house so we can sell your conversations to advertisers, like I want to go burn down the factory where they make that thing. Whereas the people that are born after the Cold War, a lot of them think that's like really annoying. Like, yeah, it'll be annoying that someone filed a patent for a type of ad where if they hear us in the room talking about pizza, it will show us an ad for Domino's on the screen. Like, that's an annoying type of ad. And to me, it's like, this is like Revelations. This is it's like a doomsday prophecy come true here. And that's the difference. So they can debate me all day about, well, but as long as we know they're going to be responsible with the data, as long as we know they're not going to abuse it, blah, blah, blah. And they may be right, but all I know is I have this gut reaction to it, and there's no way they'll have the same reaction because they didn't grow up under that shadow. Just the idea that other strangers are watching sort of everything you do, the conversations you have online, all that is just normal to them. And that's fine. They're not wrong. It's just, you know, they've never suffered any negative consequences from it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It almost makes it seem like we wanted to believe during the Cold War that the thing we objected to was this loss of privacy and our individualism and these high-minded things. But then after the Cold War ended, we ended up getting a lot of the same things from the book 1984 and all these dystopian visions of Big Brother with capitalism, and we're fine with it. It sort of suggests that we only wanted to believe that it was about the privacy, and really it was just about the lack of stuff in the Soviet Union. Like, the thing that we were really objecting to was not the cameras in our home, but the fact that you couldn't get McDonald's, forget about advertisements for pizza delivery service, because now the thing that brings us our pizza and our video games has basically co-opted all the things that we were supposed to be really terrified of and hate about Big Brother in the first place.
Well, and Google's not trying to enslave humanity. I mean, they are just trying to show us better ads. Like,
yeah,
that exactly. is all it's about. There's no secret agenda behind what Facebook is doing. They simply want to know every single little thing about you in terms of your taste and your preferences and your opinions, because they do target your wall post toward what sort of opinions you've clicked on in the past, so they can feed you more targeted ads. And I don't even know if there's anything evil about that. Well, at least it's hard for me to articulate it. But I guess my point is, when this thing with the NSA comes along later, and it's like, well, they, in addition to Facebook and Google and everyone else, also have access to everything you do on the internet. It's a very easy transition to make for the average, you know, user, because that's always been true. And I think that that's something that you just get used to, and that anyone gets used to. And of course, adults are far more compliant with this sort of thing now than they used to be. But the first time I ever saw a camera watching me in a public place, I was like 12. It was when Walmart came to town in 1986, something like that. You know, that was the first time, like, mom and pop stores didn't have those, but they had, Walmart had security cameras, and they had monitors where you could watch yourself. And I remember walking in, and, like, me and my friends goofing around, like, oh, we're on TV. Like, this is hilarious. It's, you know, look, they've got cameras watching us, you know. Well, and we were, like, goofing off. And we're now, you can't, there's no gas station you can walk into where you're not being watched. There's outdoor parking lots where you're, you know, you just assume you're being watched. And cameras are like a lot of things. You just sort of get used to having them on you. And so now every laptop's got a little pinhole camera, and people use them for Skype and all that, and that's just part of the fabric of your life. So when it transitions from that to, oh, by the way, you know, in order to stop terrorists, like, we now, you've all got like a camera on your video game system, we also reserve the right to tap into that if we should need to. And I think it won't be difficult for people to say, yeah, all right, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just hanging out. You know, like, what do I care? Whereas, again, if you had come back 30 years ago and told me that would be the future, I would think, oh, my God, you know, we lost. We lost the war, right?
My folk don't understand, so they don't take it serious. But every now and then, I wonder if the gate was put up to keep crime out of, keep our ass in.
Okay, we're back, you guys, and about to go back to part two of my interview with Jason Pargin, a.k.a. David Wong. So far, we've mostly been talking about how we feel like we're taking crazy pills as people who grew up in the 80s and during the Cold War. I laid out my theory on why we probably are crazy, and people are probably right who aren't worried about privacy. That was the part you might remember where I said the phrase post-9/11 world like a dozen times, unironically. Not my proudest moment. But now, we're going to move on to what I'm calling Jack and Jason's old-timey radio talk show part two, The Reckoning. We're going to talk about why concerns over privacy might not be totally crazy. And he actually presents some very real reasons people should maybe be concerned about their privacy that I hadn't even fully considered. And I am a very considerate person. All right, back to the interview.
Can you talk a little bit about the stuff that you find legitimately both gut level and intellectually terrifying from the articles that you saw people shrug at? By the way, this isn't sour grapes. You've published a bunch of really super popular articles in the quick fix section. These just happened to be kind of notable dead spots. Can you talk a little bit about the specific content? What is intellectually alarming?
The whole thing with Edward Snowden. The whole point of that is that I think most people didn't know what the NSA was before that. Like, it put that in the spotlight, I think, for the first time. And so what I initially thought when the story broke that people would find fascinating about it, because how many movies have been made about NSA agents? Like, there's tons of famous CIA characters, and James Bond is, you know, England's version of the CIA. But how many movies have featured the NSA? Very few. And, you know, like, obviously none in a good guy role. So the revelations that came out about these gargantuan, like 1.5 million square foot data centers they've built, that are designed to intercept all communication going on in the world anywhere. That's such a supervillain scheme idea. I thought that's what people would find fascinating about it, just learning about the NSA, what it does, how it operates. And not really. People are not terribly curious about that, because the idea of having a gigantic hangar full of computers that, even if legally they're not allowed to tap into your phone, but can tap into your phone with like 5 keystrokes anytime they want to, that doesn't alarm people. And those are the kind of the central revelations that came out of the Snowden affair. But I think while they're, again, there's that subculture of people who care about it, but I think people see them as like the equivalent of like the WikiLeaks supporters. Like they're like an edgy type of people who are weird about privacy stuff that everybody else is just kind of washes over them like, well, you know, it's terrorism, you got to stop terrorism. And also I think they're sort of what listening to everything I do anyway, so what difference does it make? But that even phrasing it like that is kind of insulting, because it makes it sound like everyone under a certain age is like too stupid to understand why this is a problem. That's not true at all. I mean, they've never suffered any consequences of their calls being listened to or their emails being monitored, and they figured, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. Where for me, and I think for the founding fathers, they thought of privacy as something that was essential for a society to function. The theory being that if you know you're being listened to, you sort of automatically restrain yourself and you don't say anything too weird or outside the box. And the societies tend to stagnate. Like, you don't get a lot of great inventions out of North Korea, and you don't get a lot of great art out of that country, because people are too scared to say anything too weird or too controversial, because they know that if they're overheard, even if they're not going to go to jail, they could be, you know, they could lose their job or be ostracized or whatever. Just in general, monitoring people tends to stifle them. So otherwise, it just doesn't seem like that big of a deal. It seems like a very friendly type of surveillance, and I think we just sort of got used to it step by step. We don't even have to use our own website as the guide. Like movies that come out where the whole movie is supposed to be scary because of the prospect of like cameras watching you, or like they've hidden cameras. Like that used to be a genre of movies like in the 90s. But there was one that starred like Shia LaBeouf, and I guess I should know the name of the movie. But anyway, it was a turd, and that sort of, like, that subject matter doesn't resonate with people anymore.
Okay, I found a pop culture moment that we can point to. One of Will Smith's earliest, most popular movies is Enemy of the State, right? Isn't that what it's called? With Gene Hackman.
Yeah, and what year was that?
That's got to be, like, 99? But that was a movie all about this, where the entire conceit of the movie was that all those things that the paranoid people have said about the government are true, and it's sort of this sort of horror story where Will Smith gets framed for a crime, and that is probably as close to sort of a central cultural memory that a lot of people have for that kind of just framework, that version of things where the government is antagonistic and using their ability to tap into your communication devices for evil and to frame you and to control what you're saying. You know, it's happening right now in Russia. One of my most vivid memories of this sort of thing was there were commenters we deduced or suspected were being paid by the Chinese government in an article that we wrote that was critical of the Chinese government, because we reported on these people whose profession it is to browse the Chinese internet and leave comments that are friendly to the government agenda, sort of this passive way of controlling public opinion, giving it positive feedback in one direction. And they, I think, have showed up on our site. And I remember being like, wow, that's really weird that they would show up on our site. But that stuff is everywhere. Before you said the thing about people not coming up with good ideas and it stifling creative thought and creative artistry and everything, I actually hadn't really had that as a thought for why this is dangerous, even though it's sort of implicit in, you know, the barren communist cities and stuff that you see in those old depictions. I hadn't really thought about that, and that's really obvious, and I'm embarrassed to admit that, but that's not an argument that I had really, like, thought of in my mind, or like a eventuality and a danger that I had really thought of. So I guess I'm one of these people. I'm kind of halfway between the generation. I'm 33, so I was born in 80. I don't remember the experience of seeing a surveillance camera for the first time and thinking of that as a thing. And so I think I've always just assumed it was a thing.
You do remember a time when if you saw somebody with a camera taking pictures, it meant that it was like somebody's birthday party.
Yes.
And if you saw a guy with a video camera up to his eye, that was like a weirdo. Like either it's a child's birthday party or it's some sort of a weirdo. So if they had told you in your youth or told me in our youth that there'd be a day when absolutely everyone has not just a camera in their pocket, but a video camera, it would be like, why? Like, what are people going to take pictures of their lunch and post it? why are you taking pictures of? It would have been impossible to understand. And again, to someone who doesn't know what I'm talking about or doesn't get why this is a concern, it sounds like I'm equating dumbasses on Instagram with a totalitarian government watching you all the time. And that's not my point. The point is that if you've grown up in a world where everybody has a camera, where you're used to being photographed, where you're used to being filmed, where you're used to being recorded, where the type of things that I as a teenager would only have like written in my diary with like a little lock on it, that now you'll post on Tumblr and know that 50,000 people, if it goes viral, could read it, that just living in a world with that sort of friendly surveillance, it makes it easier for the unfriendly kind to happen, because I'm not predicting that we're going to reach a point where if you think the wrong thing that you're going to get sent to a gulag. I'm saying that if we reach a point where if you say the wrong thing or think the wrong thing, you get professionally embarrassed and lose your job and ostracized, it has the same effect. Because you're living in a world where there are microphones all around you. Or Google Glass, if that becomes common. Everybody's got a camera attached to their glasses. So now I'm at a restaurant, I'm at a diner. Now I have to think twice about the joke I'm about to make, about the observation I'm about to make, about the candidate I'm about to support, because I'm, in my own small way, a public figure. So it reaches a point where you just know in the back of your mind, as a part of your life, like just part of the air around you, there are microphones and cameras everywhere, you start to check yourself all the time. And if there are people right now hearing me say that, whose response is, well, you shouldn't be bad-mouthing people in public. You shouldn't be saying, you shouldn't be making jokes about whatever terrible subject you're thinking right now. And I don't know how to explain to them the problem with that. That part of your brain that thinks inappropriate things is also the part of the brain that has been responsible for all great acts of human creativity in the history of the species. So what you're thinking of, well, just be responsible with what you think, be responsible with what you say. I understand exactly what you mean, but there was a time when you used to be able to sort of relax and get the stupid thoughts out of your head. And sometimes in the course of hearing yourself say them, you would realize they're stupid and then move on. But you got to have those conversations where if I have this some really inappropriate conversation when I'm at the cracked office, like we'll all sit around and like advocate eugenics for just hours on end.
Yes.
Now it's like, well, if someone hears this could hurt the site or this could hurt us. And knowing that in the future, you will be hurt. Now, if there's like a tornado somewhere in the emptiest part of Midwest, we immediately assume there's going to be cell phone video of it. Like, that's how ubiquitous it is, even though these things didn't exist 20 years ago. There's going to reach a point in the future where if a controversial conversation is held somewhere, we're going to assume there's cell phone video of it or Google Glass video of it or whatever. Because if we've gotten this used to being watched and this used to being monitored, it just makes sense that over time, some people think it's weird that the new Xbox has a camera that watches you at home, but the next round of consoles will all have them. And it's just going to be like the people who think it's weird to have a camera watching you in the house, they're going to be the oddballs. They're going to be considered like hermits. Like, what, are you paranoid? Like, what, just because strangers watching you masturbate, you think that's weird? What are you ashamed? You ashamed of how you masturbate? What's, you're like, they're not going to get it. And you're laughing now, but like 20 years from now, that's nobody's going to get why you're laughing if they listen to this recording, because that's going to be just a fact of everyday life. Because we've proven, just in the time I've been alive, that we can absolutely get used to any level of surveillance. Like, there's no line where we stop it, as long as it doesn't, like, personally come back to bite us. But I think it's overall, I think it's a bad trend, but again, that's probably my own bias. I don't even think I can articulate all that well why the benefits don't outweigh these supposed, you know, negatives that I'm putting out there.
I think it's really, everything you just said was really interesting, and it struck me at a certain point that what you're talking about with not being able to speak your mind in public because, you know, people have recording devices and cameras everywhere is... The standard they're holding you to is called political correctness, right? But then what you're talking about with fear of the world where you can't speak your mind being phased out and moved away from, I could kind of almost feel that happening in my head, because what you were saying makes total sense. That's the death of original thought and progressive thought, is when you can't speak your mind in public for fear that someone is recording it and will use it against you. That's the death of original thought. But it also sounds a lot like railing against political correctness, which is something that I associate with, you know, whack jobs, with crazy people, Rush Limbaugh, and like people who listen to AM radio and think the government is going to come for their guns. That's who I think rails against political correctness. But at the same time, that is exactly why this is dangerous. It's going to keep moving in that direction, I think, is the conclusion that we've both come to.
Well, I don't feel sorry for a Rush Limbaugh or a Daniel Tosh, because they want to make a living saying outrageous things and make millions of dollars saying outrageous things, because outrageous things are a cheap way to get people to pay attention to you. And then when you get backlash, complain that, oh, this is PC run amok. That's trying to have it both ways. Because the backlash is also free speech. That's also part of the conversation. I thought a lot of incredibly stupid things in my 20s. To go back and find the small town version of me at age 19 and to take the stupid things I said and have them recorded forever and used against me as an example of why I should never be listened to, because look at all these idiotic things this guy said at 19 or 20. Or look at all the things this guy said at bachelor party, talking to five of his friends, making jokes, trying to say the most outrageous thing we can think of, because that makes us laugh, and getting that stuff out of our system, and all things we're not allowed to say in polite society. To use that and to have it like permanently on the public record, as if I had taken to a microphone and gotten paid $1 million a year to say it, knowing I have 5 million listeners. If you have a platform like Rush Limbaugh, he is in a rare, very privileged position where everything he says is heard by millions of people, and he has a voice and influence that most of us will never, ever, ever achieve. That comes with it a certain amount of responsibility. So I don't feel sorry for him one bit when he suffers backlash for something he says. But when that same standard applies to a half-drunk guy who's 22 years old at a bar in a terrible mood and starts ranting about whatever, the Mexicans taking our jobs, that may not reflect this guy's true opinion. It may not reflect who he is a few years later. But in a world where everything is recorded, that's forever going to be on record.
Yeah, a case can be built against anyone. And you saw that with both sides of the Trayvon Martin case, I guess, with, you know, the fact that he had taking pictures, smoking pot, and with guns in the past being used to prove that, well, he was a dangerous kid and not this innocent person the media is making him out to be. And then things that George Zimmerman had said, I think on tape, had been recorded. Basically, when there's a motivation there, you can build a case against anyone. Not saying that either of those guys were particularly innocent, but it seems like that is the world we live in now.
Yeah, and there's an article in Slate about a new mother talking about how she's not, a lot of her friends, when they became parents, they immediately made a Facebook profile for their infant and started posting all the baby pictures up there. And she had noticed that Facebook had changed their terms of service to mention the facial recognition technology they use now. That's the new feature of Facebook. They'll go hunt down pictures of you other people have taken, and they do it by checking your facial features. And she had pointed out that as a result of that, she had decided not to put any photos of her kid online, not to create any online accounts, not to register their kid for any baby products or anything like that until the kid was old enough to make that decision for herself. Because she says, all I can think of is that we're going into a world where now that facial recognition stuff will be in everything. So by the time she becomes a teenager, somebody will be able to search like every video she's ever appeared in, every photo she's ever appeared in, anywhere. And everything, every dumb thing she did as a baby will be held against her. And like all those embarrassing things, like some photo of you at age 5 naked wearing only cowboy boots, that's going to now turn up when your employers are trying to find out what type of person you are. And they can draw all sorts of conclusions. I mean, who knows, based on what they judge your family life to have been like, what they judge your background to have been like. And she was like, this has reached a point where I feel like I'm trapping her by getting this jump start on making sure that every little thing is documented forever on the internet, because as time goes by, it's going to be where you cannot escape that past. Whereas, good God, if you were in middle school and if you had some device that would let you magically see like the youth of your teachers, like what they did when they were 19, 20, would never have respected a single thing they ever said. Like the moment they told you to sit down or go sit in the corner, like all you would picture is like them like showing their boobs at Mardi Gras, like a beer stuck up their butt or whatever. And so, but that's, we've lived up until now through all of human history knowing that the past is forgotten and knowing that you can kind of become an adult and all of that is forgiven. But those days are over. Anybody born after a certain year, I mean, you're not going to find any pictures, because I'm 38, you're not going to find any pictures of me younger than when I started my Facebook account at age 34. That's it. That's as far back as I go. But that's not going to be true 15 years from now. Like all the kids born in the last however many years, their entire life, every birthday, every major event, you're going to be able to search it and find it.
It would be one thing if everybody's constant, continuous electronic permanent record was their own private material that they could do what they wish with, but the fact that it is public, it's available to your government and it's available to pretty much everyone that you know. And if you don't make it available, like, I'm sure that woman has friends who now think of her as paranoid for not getting her infant started with a social profile. It's just seen as more cool and progressive and interesting to give your kid a Facebook page and document everything, because we're still in this honeymoon phase.
But I think that everything we've said, like everything we've articulated here, I think if people who are listening to this, I think if they're under a certain age, for the most part, not all of them, for the most part, it sounds like we're Amish. Like we're,
we'll
like we're complaining about the evil motor cars and the evil cameras going to steal your soul if they take a picture. I don't know if Amish believe that. I apologize to their Amish listeners. I think it sounds silly to them because you youngsters out there.
We're off to a good start. You're reaching them clearly.
Here's how you'll know when you've gotten old. Because a lot of you, if you're in your 20s, you already have had that experience of realizing, oh my God, I'm getting older. For instance, you find out that your favorite album in high school is now 10 years old, and you say, oh my God, I'm getting old. Or you hear like Justin Bieber is like, oh my God, this is crap. I can't believe this is what teenagers listen to. And you think, I'm getting old because I don't get what the youngsters are listening to. That is not what getting old feels like. Like, you already have that experience of music being different from what you would have listened to, or your taste being different. What getting old feels like is when you see the young people doing something that disgusts you so much that you don't even know how to tell them why it's wrong. So it's not like in the future finding out that your kids like put avocado on their pizza. I'm like, oh, that's disgusting. Who would eat avocado? It's like seeing your kids put spiders on their pizza and eat it. It's not unhealthy, but it's so repulsive to you that you would just sit there stammering, like, what are you, you're eating spiders. To give an example, for my parents, I think their spiders on the pizza moment was when they heard me listening to gangster rap, because they were very well familiar with the concept of, I don't like the music kids listen to these days. But they were unfamiliar with the sensation of hearing their son listen to songs about killing policemen and singing along with, and then I killed the cop and I cut off his head. They had that like stammering reaction, like what has happened? Have you joined a gang? They couldn't even explain why it was wrong, because it's so outrageous that I would even do that, that they had no words for it. That's what it's like for me when I hear somebody 19, 20 years old say, what do I care if Microsoft watches me sit here and play video games? Like, what do I care? Like, I'm not doing what they want to watch it. What do I care? I'll just sit here. You know, if I'm masturbating, what do I care? They want to watch, they can watch. I don't even know how to explain why that's wrong, because it's so different. But I honestly don't know that they're the one who's wrong and that I'm the one that's right. I just think that it's such a profound change in the culture that it's kind of irreconcilable. And part of it, I realize, is just my personality. I'm kind of a private person. But for me, like, I've got the TV right here. If I had a Kinect on, they were watching me. Right now, I'm shirtless. So I'm oiling up my chest because you caught me at my workout. Like, there's nothing shameful about that. I realize that. But that's still my time. I still don't want to be watched. And I can't explain why.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, because that's something you should be proud of and share with the world. And, you know, you're just being inhibited by the world that you grew up in. All right. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
We kids used to play outside without the high pass of the candle fire. All right, I think that about covers it. There are plenty of movies from the 90s that are paranoid about, you know, surveillance and loss of personal privacy that I totally forgot. The Firm is probably the best example. It's sort of like Enemy of the State, but replace the government with your corporate employer. There's that famous scene, I don't know if it's famous, it was memorable to me, where Tom Cruise realizes his company is bugging his living room, and so he, like, goes and turns his music up loud and, like, pretends to dance with his wife and, like, whispers secret messages into her ear. It's a very elaborate way to hide what he's saying from his company, and now we all have video game consoles in our living rooms that openly listen in, and we just don't care. And that's actually one place that we've seeing people's loss of privacy have consequences. Like, when your company needs a reason to fire you, they have a mountain of data to use against you. All your emails and phone conversations. It's just another one of those subtle reasons we're not totally crazy for being a little skeptical of having a totally public electronic record of everything you do. But on the other hand, I just want to go back to the gold standard thing one more time. There were some pretty compelling theoretical reasons why going off the gold standard should have crippled our economy. I mean, it was basically like, well, here is a bunch of theoretical money that has nothing to back it up. It is sort of crazy when you think about it. And people just kind of guessed that, well, we'll be able to handle that added responsibility. We won't go too crazy. And we have been handling it for 100 years. So hopefully that's how we handle our total loss of personal privacy. You know, 100 years from now, the first half and maybe the second half of that podcast will look totally insane. All right, footnotes. First up, you heard a song called Cell Therapy by Goody Mob, which I chose because it's one of my favorite rap songs ever. The hook is kind of paranoid, and the lyrics, everything's sort of paranoid, which seemed appropriate for the content, and also appropriate for the content of a podcast that was about how much things have changed since the 90s. That rap group has CeeLo Green in it. He actually has a really good verse on that song. He's not a bad rapper, I say with the high-pitched voice that makes you know that I don't totally believe that. But no, he was actually really good in Goody Mob, and I don't know. I don't know anything else that changed as much as my perception of CeeLo Green from the 90s to today. Then, at the end, you heard Dr. Awkward, Doc Ock, rapping about 90s stuff, as recommended by Daniel O'Brien. who, totally independent of this podcast, produced a video that's coming out on the site soon, in which he explains why everything we just said was important and scary just totally isn't, and why we're too worried about privacy and just too old. There's a minute section where he just brags about how he could beat me in a foot race and does push-ups with my wife on his back. Seems sort of excessive. But anyways, yes, we're old. This song was recommended by Daniel because he's young. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Coming up either next week or the week after, we have our next full meal of an episode, which is on the subject of origin stories. So hold on to your butts, and we'll see you then.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. The wolf dead.